The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the Nova Society are those of our guests and panel members and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of any institution any member of the Nova Society is associated with. The material information presented on the Nova Society is for general information purposes only. Reproduction or dissemination for the purpose other than education is prohibited without express written consent of the Nova Society. We'd like to welcome everyone back to the Nova Society. Today we'll be talking about the recent events between Israel and Iran, the recent attack of Iran upon Israel, and the retaliation by Israel that followed a few days later. We'll also be talking about the protest movements that are happening in college campuses across the United States. Is being pro-Palestinian actually being pro-Hamas? And if that's the case, is being pro-Palestinian actually anti-Israel? So we're going to take up that conversation. We hope you'll join us.
A lot of things going on, Scott.
Always seems to be, at least these last 8 years or so.
So, of course, last week, Iran sent a whole bunch of missiles over at good old Israel.
Yep.
Ourselves, the Brits, the Jordanians, and the Israelis, and the Iron Dome, and all that stuff worked really well. Very little damage was done. Supposedly, Iran said they were doing this because of retaliation for the attack on the embassy in Damascus. But then they said, that's it. We're even. That's it. Yesterday, last night, our time, Israel attacked Iran.
Yep.
In a very limited manner, again. What do you think's the outcome of that, Scott?
I think Iran has already downplayed the damage that was done. So my assumption would be that this is over, at least for now. This episode is done, and that business as usual, which means more action in Gaza, more support for the proxy groups by Iran will continue, and I think for me. The bigger thing, you know, and this is a little sidetrack, but the bigger thing that's going on in the world right now is not the conflict between Iran and Israel, but the conflict between people who are so pro-Gaza or pro-Palestinian that they're actually pro-Hamas. And the propaganda war is being won by Hamas, and they're going to keep this thing going as long as that's true. There's not going to be a hostage exchange. Israel is going to have to go in, and there's going to be a lot of sadness as a result of that. And I don't. Look, I think everybody should speak their mind, and I don't have a problem with people doing that. I don't even have a problem with people tying up traffic, as long as I'm not the one who gets stuck in it, which I may have on my way to the Met game on the Whitestone Bridge on Monday night.
Rub it in.
They know how to read newspaper clippings, and they understand, and they watch TV, and when they see people in the West singing "From the River to the Sea," all that does is just fuel this more. Anybody who mistakes Hamas for freedom fighters is making a huge mistake. Their goal is not a two-state solution or peace or anything like that. Their goal is to wipe out the Israelis altogether, and then they'll go to work on people who are not sufficiently Muslim for them, too, and Christians and everybody else. So people are making a big mistake.
My one take from this is that there doesn't seem to be any plan. You know, where does this go? I mean, all this firing back and forth, it seems, you know, it's military action for the purpose of exactly what? What is the long-term expectation of any of this stuff? Israel has proved itself to be a very capable military. as far as being able to plan and conduct these exercises. They're very bad at looking at what the long-term goals are going to be. And as far as, you know, what is the expectation of what you gain out of this? Usually military action has some sort of gain. And you wonder what is that? All it is just going to keep propagating itself.
Yeah, well, I mean, the statement is from Israel, as I understand it, is, well, you hit us, we hit you back. Okay. So now they've hit back. And as you say, Iran has downplayed it. And they've apparently their news is saying, nothing really happened. Nothing of value was hit. And this and that, and so everybody's saving face, and that's apparently the end of it, which is certainly better than having a large escalation in missiles flying back and forth. But yeah, as you say, there's no end to, well, you hit us, we hit back. Okay, I think this is simply going to drag on.
But, you know, Brooke, what do you think of this, though? Let me just jump in here a second and ask you a question.
Please. Yeah.
Iran shot missiles and sent drones, 300 of them, at Israel, and most of them got shot down. Israel shot a bunch of missiles. I don't remember how many it was, if anybody knows yet, how many missiles they shot at Iran, and they didn't shoot a single one of them down. So there is a lesson there. You know, there is a dialogue going on that basically says we can get to you a lot easier than you can get to us. So, right. You know, maybe it's time you guys stood down here. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're going to stand down. They're going to take this one and just walk away from it. I don't think there's going to be further retaliation.
No, I agree. I mean, plus nobody has helped Iran with anything. As Mark said, there was the UK, there was this, there was that, coming to the aid of Israel, and nobody has done anything for Iran. So, I don't know what the point of any of that exchange was. Just tit for tat? I mean, Israel shot a missile at the embassy in Damascus. Yes. So then
it was not an embassy. It was a consulate that was actually being used by the Iranian Guards Al-Quds unit, which is their covert operations.
Okay.
Supposedly to plan a strike. And that Israel took out those leaders there and their top aides to prevent that strike from happening. And Iran had to respond back, which it did. And then Israel had to respond back, which it did. And again, now it seems to be business as usual.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure gas prices went up today.
Oh, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I haven't gone out. I have no idea. And, you know, on that note, this is something that I was actually reading. Students at more universities announced solidarity rallies after 108 pro-Palestinian activists are arrested in Colombia. And some of these universities, I didn't know these things existed. University of North Carolina, Students for Justice in Palestine. The Boston University, Students for Justice in Palestine. Ohio State has a chapter of that now. Harvard.
The Ohio State.
Go Buckeyes. That's right. Gotta say the Ohio State as opposed to the other Ohio State. Yeah. Harvard has one of these kind of groups. And, you know, we were just answering an email from a high school student in the previous episode. And we said, you know, you've got to be able to get out there and do the things that you think you have to do. Now, I know that there's a lot of people that may disagree with these groups. I get it. I truly do. But, I mean, they're really, in many ways, this is basically exercising exactly what we were promoting in the last episode, was you just get out there and, you know, do your protest thing. I noticed Scott made mention of he's going to the Mets game on Monday. I'm sure that was just to be a dig at me because he knows I won't be going to the Mets game on Monday.
Oh, I went. It was Jackie Robinson. And that was the day where the Palestinian protests were stopping traffic on bridges. I got stuck in traffic going onto the Whitestone Bridge for over an hour.
Oh, wow.
And I was just lucky that I had left so early because I was hoping to do a little tailgating when I got there. and that, you know, being stuck didn't end up being terrible for my plans. So
okay. Did interrupt the tailgating a little bit, which I do know could be a little bit
of a cut into my tailgate.
It cut into my tailgate. Okay. Gotta hate when that happens.
I hate when the Palestinians caused me to cut into my tailgating.
That's exactly right.
Seems like a first world problem right there.
I mean, but you know, it really, our generation has a certain feeling about the Israel conflict with Palestine. We have a certain, you know, there's a certain general feeling about that.
But again, I'm sorry, but anybody who thinks that Hamas is a peaceful group, is a peace-loving group that wants to create some kind of equitable force in Israel where there's two states living side by side is just crazy. And anybody who sings from the river to the sea is advocating for genocide because there are 7 million Jewish people living in between the river and the sea that won't be there anymore.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Where are these young people getting this idea?
Everywhere else they're getting it. Everywhere else everybody's getting everything. It's coming from social media. And look, I see it. My daughter is like just, you know, all of her friends have come out as pro-Palestinian. She's called me up and said, I need you to fuel me a little bit with some some objections here, you know, because it's really tough. I'm like the only one out of 10 people who, you know, who feels that Israel is doing the right thing. And I was like, it's not really a matter of Israel doing the right thing or the wrong thing. I wish it wasn't going on at all. I wish 10/7 never happened. I wish that they had, you know, signed peace agreements in the past like they certainly could have. But the fact is that they didn't, and it's not going to end tomorrow, but there is light at the end of the tunnel, and that was what Hamas was acting toward. That's what angered Iran, was the fact that there was going to be some kind of peace deal between the Saudi Arabians and the Israelis, and it was definitely going to include a two-state solution because the Saudis wouldn't do this without it. Every time that there's light at the end of the tunnel, somebody on some side is going to step up and commit acts of violence to derail it. And you've got to be able to fight through this thing. And as I think Joe Biden the other day said, it may not happen tomorrow now. It was awful close to coming, but it may not happen. But at least we can get back on track. And I know he spoke to the Saudis and he encouraged them to do just that. And hopefully it will, and there will be a solution to this thing. But it's not, you know, as we know from Ireland and from Rwanda and from a whole bunch of other incidents that were long-lasting, violent, cycle of violence, violence begetting violence, you've got to get rid of the emotion first, you know? Right. I mean, that lesson was right there. 40 years in the desert for the Israelis before they could go to the promised land was meant to get rid of the mentality that those people had. That generation had to die off, and new people with a new attitude had to go into the promised land. We've seen this time and time again. The emotions have to come out of it. And right now the emotions are high everywhere.
So, and I'm going to turn to Priscilla very quickly, because one of the advices that she gave to Stephanie was be very critical in your analysis of the information that you're getting out of social media. Priscilla also said that when she speaks to her daughter, it's let's talk this out. Is that something that might transform this, Priscilla? I mean, so let's look at these college students. They're probably not going to be like Scott's daughter calling up saying, hey dad, give me ammunition here so that, you know, I could do. Where do these students turn to?
For what it's worth, in this particular situation, talking it out hasn't worked in 2,000 years.
What are you trying to say?
I think talking it out would be incredibly helpful, but you have to be willing to talk it out to people who aren't going to confirm your bias. So, you know, if you support one group, then go talk to the people who are of the other group. Sit down and hear what they have to say. I think what happens in this world of social media and the news, especially around things like this, where the emotions are so high, is it gets dehumanized. It becomes a lump thing. And people forget that there are individuals and who are involved. And then they don't have anything on their spectrum to be like, oh, maybe I should actually think about this a little bit differently and how I'm framing my support once they know somebody. And sometimes that somebody is right under their nose and they just don't realize it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not being loud and obvious. And some of that has to do with, depending on what group you're supporting, you know, maybe you feel safer not speaking up. You know, so it's like, it's quite possible a very loudly opinionated person can say something that's harmful and no one's holding them to task because they're too afraid. Right. So it's like, if for talking to work, it has to happen, I think, at the community level, the grassroots level, and that whole proverbial, like, go shake hands and, you know, be brothers and sisters kind of, you know, Mr. Rogers perspective of the neighborhood. But I think at the leadership level, at the government level, you're up against 2,000 years of history there. I think the more ingrained a particular behavior is into history, the harder it is to switch it off.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. We get these things ingrained into us and it kind of just sticks with us. And it sticks with countries too. My dissertation was on how countries can develop personality traits, regardless of who is the leadership, regardless of the type of government they have, regardless of anything else. The country gets ingrained into itself. It almost becomes an entity, even though it's a social construct. It almost gets ingrained to itself a predictable personality trait that they are going to continually propagate all the time. And it doesn't matter if the government is democratic, communists, any one of the different government structures, that country will still gravitate toward those behavior patterns regardless. And I think we see that a lot, and that we see it with Russia. We see it with the United States. We see it with Israel. We see it with all these, all countries basically have this this cycle that they go through, and it's very hard to break. I think the one country I could say that actually kind of broke it was Japan. Japan was always a very conquest, ideologically conquest type of colonialism. And they now, after World War II, have taken on this basic pacifism, which I think is fine. I think they should need to be a little bit more involved than they are, but I mean they've stepped back from that, and they had to, in many ways, completely shrug off centuries of Japanese behavioral custom as a nation, and I give them a lot of credit for it because that's a hard thing to do. We can't do it. United States has always been a huge supporter of Israel. Always. I don't think there's anything Israel could do that would make us not be supporters of Israel.
But I think part of it also is it's gotten very murky.
Oh,
about,
yeah.
Are you supporting Israel or are you supporting Jewish people? And the extent to which the nationalism is sort of superseding the humanity of it, I think is where I think a lot of students are starting to get into this zone of like, I'm pro this, I'm pro that, because it's like the propaganda is at the nationalistic level. It's not at the human level. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I hear like the protests where folks are like looking to out a university president for, you know, squashing an anti-whatever organization, it's like, are we really talking about anti the thing, or are we talking about anti the people? Are we being racist, or are we actually just throwing our name behind something for the sake of throwing our name behind something? Or is it actually a really legit, genuine concern to support?
And my feeling has always been nationalism is a great political system for stupid people. It doesn't take a whole heck of a lot of thought. And I will agree with one area. You can be against policies of Israel and not hate Jewish people. And why we cannot make that break is sometimes beyond me. I mean, you got to separate that out. And I think that what's happening is our social media, our news, our all of this stuff is not separating it out. They're saying, well, if you're against, if you're in any way pro-human beings that just so happen to be Palestinian, therefore you must be anti-Israel or anti-Jewish or something like that. And that's not the case. And not all Jewish people support Benjamin Netanyahu. And I think that's an important thing to remember. There's a lot of them that don't support him. Scott?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I can see Scott getting ready there because I mentioned Netanyahu.
So, you know, supporting Netanyahu and supporting Israel are not the same thing, clearly. And the Israelis themselves have been protesting Netanyahu almost from the day he came back into power after that last election. He put together that coalition. They clearly he's got to answer for what happens on October 7th, and in the run-up to that, we still don't really know, but there are a lot of questions that we have that, you know, that he's going to have to answer for. And I think that's a real healthy democratic thing to do, is to make him answer for them. And I'd rather it happen sooner, but I know that the earliest there's going to be an election in Israel is going to be September, and it might not even happen then. But it should, and it, and he should be voted out, and he should be, subject to an investigation and possibly put on trial, along with the other trials that he's going to have. So it's not the same thing. It is, you know, I think Van Jones was on CNN. It might have been yesterday, and he said there are 15 million Jews in the world. There are millions and millions. There are billions of Muslims, there are billions of other people, 15 million Jews, half of them in Israel and half here in the States or spread around a little bit. And it's an endangered resource and needs to be protected. And if we can't find it in ourselves to protect Israel, then we're going to, you know, finish the work of the worst haters and anti-Semites out there. So sometimes we do have to go a little bit further maybe than we want to protect this. But again, it's such a small minority, such a tiny minority. And it really is just, it really would be a terrible shame. And as I mentioned in previous podcasts, I can remember the Yom Kippur War, my father saying, I don't know if they're going to make it through this one. You know, I mean, it has not been a lock. They have not been the most powerful player in the region for very long. And kids don't understand that. Young people don't understand that. They see Israel as the Goliath and not the David. I grew up with them being the David and very much not the Goliath. And I hate to think what's going to have to happen for them to regain their David status. I don't think they'll survive it. So I urge everybody to be measured in your disgust or hatred of Israel, because if you've never been there, it's a miracle. Go there. It's something else. It really is. And it's worth keeping it alive.
But at the same time, the people, the Palestinians are in dire, you know, they shouldn't be just allowed to be decimated and murdered. And
no, I agree.
I mean, there's children, and it's just the whole situation is. I mean, Hamas has got to go, but of course, you have to find them, which you can't do. and which Hamas has done deliberately. And I recognize, I mean, they're using their own people, which is why they have to go. And I mean, we just go around and around. I mean, a person can be pro-Palestine people because they're human beings and they don't deserve to be murdered any more than and starved to death and live in squalor any more than anybody else does, and be anti-Hamas and anti-authoritarian and anti-cruelty without being anti-Jewish people. I mean, you know, as Mark said, I mean, I don't understand why certain things can't be separated from
one. Because we don't want to. Yeah, a lot of people just don't want to.
It's not that difficult mentally to, maybe people just don't have any kind of tolerance for ambiguity.
No, it's zero-sum thinking. Plain and simple. It's zero-sum thinking. You know, you're either all for or all against, but it is that zero sum. You're either 100%. Same thing with just what we're doing today, you know, here. If you don't agree with me 100%, you obviously are totally in the wrong or totally against. And it's like, no, that's not the way it works. Just not the way life works. All right.
So that's all the time we have for today's episode. The Nova Society is a production of the Phoenix Research Institute. We'd like to thank our sponsor for this week's episode, the Phoenix Research Group, an independent research consortium offering social issue solutions to NGOs and international government agencies through multidisciplinary, nonpartisan, and unbiased research. We'd also like to thank our podcast partners, Buzzsprout, who hosts the Nova Society, Audacity, our editing partners, Podkite, who does all our analytics, iHeartRadio, where people get their music and podcasts, Apple iTunes, the largest source of music and podcasts on the internet, Spotify, the most popular source for the Nova Society. The Nova Society is available on all these and other quality platforms mentioned in our description. We'd like to thank our listeners. Without you, the Nova Society would not be possible. If you have a comment, a question, or would like to be a guest on the Nova Society, we can be reached at nova.society.podcast@gmail.com. Always remember, the power of society is knowledge. So for Dr. Scott Gershwer, Dr. Priscilla Hobbs, Dr. Brooklyn Ann Weldon, and all of us here at the Nova Society, I'm Dr. Mark Bound. Be well, and we hope to see you again next time.